This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast. Hope you're enjoying the series so far. Remember, we go weekly from September the 3rd. This week's episode features one of my closest friends in the NFL, former Indianapolis Colts tight end Dallas Clark. Dallas caught more than 500 passes during a career that saw him become a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro, and a Super Bowl champion. I've got to know him since 2016, and he's been a part of our Sky Sports coverage ever since. It's always a pleasure for me to work with Dallas when I have the opportunity, and likewise, it's always a positive treat for him.
You're assuming that the feeling is mutual. I'm worried how you'll answer otherwise. That's a really bold assumption. Just, you can read into that since you're not going to let me answer it. So I don't know how, if that affects your next follow-up questions, but you know, I'd say tread lightly.
Yeah, good. Well, it's good to be warned early doors. You obviously come over every year now. It seems like it's been a lot of years.
Yeah, 3 years in a row.
Yeah. Do you enjoy it though? I know we've talked before about what you do over here, and you know, we get you out to the fans around the London games. You get to do the Sky Sports stuff. I know you came down and I've seen the NFL Academy up close as well. Do you kind of enjoy being a part of something a little bit different?
Neil, 100%. It is something that I feel just so privileged to kind of be on the ground, if you will, ground zero of the, you know, just the possibility of an NFL team being over here. And not only that, but just the behind the scenes, all the activity that goes on that a normal fan doesn't see, especially one from the States. Mm. You know, I go back home and I tell people about what I'm doing, and they look at me like what? Like, what are they doing over there? Like the Academy, you know? And so to just kind of be able to come over here, like be home farming, raising our family, you know, figuring out all that, and then to be able to just kind of slip away for a week or two and come over here to London, a city that I've absolutely just love.
Yep.
And just every time I come back, it's just like, man, this city can't get any more awesome. And the people are phenomenal. And the excitement of football is growing. Mm. The recognition is growing. Still would like to, when we're at those tailgates and you introduce me, you know, maybe we could, you know, there's great with audio and stuff. Maybe we could add a little more like applause. You know, because piped in applause. Because one thing I do know is that I'm not Peyton Manning, and I don't have international street cred.
I think you're getting there. One day as well, I should give you a proper introduction. Because I always give, we couldn't find anyone else, so please welcome back Dallas Clark. Or, well, we wanted somebody from the Dallas Cowboys, and they misread my email, and we got Dallas Clark.
And then you said Dwight Clark. And
yeah, one
really,
day I should.
And
I would do it
then
one
everyone
day.
Was yelling, the catch, the
yeah,
catch.
I would do it one day. But let's talk about your career, because more than 500 catches in your career. You were an All-Pro, which is the best of the best. You were a Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion, so ticking all those kind of boxes. But let's go right back. Because this is a chance for – we have such limited time on TV. It's like little sound bites and stuff. And I wanted to really dig into kind of your career. And were you a football fan growing up? And was it – if you were, was it NFL or was it college? Because sometimes it can be college and not NFL. What was
Absolutely.
It like
well,
up?
Actually, it's a little different for me as well. Growing up, I have two older brothers, and Dan is 7 years older than me, and Derek is 4 years older than me. And so I had my role models across the hall in our bedrooms, in-house, and they were very athletic. Dan, our oldest, is, you know, he's kind of the run of the family. Derek's 6'4", I'm 6'3 and 3/4", and Dan's barely 6 foot. You know, just kind of the run, and I truly believe, I tell everyone, like, if he was 6'4", he would have been a Division I. I mean, he was a really good quarterback, and he had a really good arm, and just savvy, just real smart. He's a coach now, surprisingly.
Okay.
So, and so I was always in the backyard playing with them, you know, running routes for Dan, right. You know, getting my friends over, getting a tackle game going.
No tackling to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Safety.
Oh, yeah. Tackling. Yeah. Yeah. You could lead with your helmet or your head. Yeah, you no helmet. Padded. We have no helmets. I mean, it was true, you know, back of the schoolyard. And, you know, this is what I love about us growing up in the 80s and 90s is that, you know, I called up, you know, David Yeager. I called up Jared Bratlin. I called up Justin Collins. Said, hey, 2 o'clock, schoolyard.
Right.
And we went there, no parents. And if you got beat, if you got made fun of, you had two choices, Neil. You either bucked up and fought back and got tougher, or you cried and took your ball and you went home. I probably did, you know, a share of everything, you know, as you do growing up. And then you go home and you have that deep, you know, reflection of tomorrow, I'm not going to put up with that.
So there was none of this. We're not going to keep a competitive scoreline. It's all about participation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
it was a different time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you lost.
Yeah.
We beat you.
Yeah.
You know, and now I grow up and our kids are, you know, are my wife and, you know, now we have play dates. And right. and my kid,
I'll meet you on Madden online.
Yes, you know,
I'll play you online.
And so hey, how about we get the kids together to play? You know, it's the parents getting the kids together to play instead of the kids.
More organic back then.
Yeah, and I truly believe, you know, I don't want to get too deep and you know, Dr. Phil, Oprah Winfrey here on you, but I really believe it's near the source of the problem with these kids that, you know, they grow up in a, you know, kind of a, you know, softer mentality.
They don't know how to lose and deal with that and deal with adversity.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's a big part of life. I mean, there's no protecting you from that. So back to, I mean, we got sidetracked big time, but growing up, my brothers were my role models and I wanted to be like them. And so then when they went to college and played football, Derek, awesome. He made it to Division I football. He played at Iowa State. And Neil, I promise you, is his first night, is a home game. They're playing Wyoming. It was a night game. I was looking down at the field. I was way up in the upper deck. And I looked down on the field, and it was like a lightning bolt or just like an image, something.
But I was like,
I want to do this.
Yeah, I want that.
And it was like from then on, all gears, all wheels pointing towards doing that.
Now, when you look at the percentages of players who make it from high school to college and then college to the NFL, it outlines the challenge everyone faces to make it as a pro. There will be bumps in the road along the way, and there are challenges to overcome. It's all part of the process and something Dallas dealt with as a youngster. And it was just the same when he arrived at the University of Iowa.
Well, let's go a step back and just to get into the doors of Iowa. My brother Dan had graduated from Simpson. He was a Division III football player and baseball player. So I went to Simpson College, took all my high school VHS tapes, and we literally made my own highlight tape. And we sent it out to.
Is that literally slicing up pieces of tape? So it's proper old school, right?
Like literally slicing.
Yeah.
And it took all day, literally. And then we sent them to Iowa. We sent them to Wisconsin. We sent them to Colorado. We sent them to Nebraska. Sent it to all the kind of local nearby Division I schools that either I liked or that Derek had played being at Iowa State. You know, Colorado was beautiful. And so guess who calls? No one. I graduated with 32 kids. So I am in the middle of nowhere. I have small school. We got 50 pointed. We had two of our teams my senior year get just – they had the mercy rule. If you're getting beat by over 50 points, they just quit the game.
Wow.
So I had that twice. So – but Iowa
– if no one called, first of all, why is that not the end of the Dallas Clark story?
Well, because Iowa – and I truly believe like they went – they never told me, but I believe that Derek played at Iowa State.
Right.
And so they're like, wait, we get this film from this kid whose brother plays at Iowa State. Like, okay, what's going on
maybe
here?
There's something there.
Yeah. And so they came up. So they, Coach Hendricks came up to one of my basketball practices in the winter. And I tell you what, that was, might be the coolest day. It's like, I'm like, Iowa just came to see, you know, and they asked me to walk on. And so that's, so finishing up my senior year, 4 days before I graduated high school, our mom passed away with a heart attack. And I lived with mom, and my folks were divorced. My dad was in the picture, but lived with mom. And so that summer, I basically lived by myself in that house. And so, like, when I went to college that fall in 98 – oh, by the way, then about a short month later, playing baseball, playing in a game – I'm playing shortstop, and I run into the second baseman. I break my collarbone. Oh. And so literally, like, within –
So you're behind the eight ball before you even start.
Dude, I am, like, I'm asking questions that I don't think any 18-year-old really should be asking themselves. Right. You know, yeah. I mean, it was pretty much life hits you in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was – so I called up Iowa, and I said, hey – do you still want me? You know, I'm kind of damaged goods right now. You know? God bless him, Brett Bielema, who was Wisconsin head coach, was Arkansas head coach, and then he's with the Patriots right now. Just a really good man that just kind of, you know, in the game of football, in the NFL, you just need one guy to believe in you, you know, truly. And right. So, you know, Brett Bielema was that guy early on. And because Hayden Fry – his staff left. His staff recruited me. And so when I came to campus, I only took 9 hours of class. I wasn't a full-time student, so my eligibility didn't start. So it's kind of a way around, like, let me heal because I wasn't ready to do training camp with my collarbone. So I just went to school. And I went to the games and watched just like a regular student. And then Hayden Fry retires and Coach Ferentz comes in. And I come into that office that next spring like – please, God, someone recognize me. And thank goodness he kept Brett Bielema, the linebacker coach, on staff. Otherwise, they'd have been like, yeah, this is our team. You know, this is our guys. And so I start in. I'm number 109, because all the numbers are taken. And so – and I don't know
if you – can't even have a proper number.
No, no. So
– you can't wear 109.
You can't wear 109. So anyone out there that – you've never seen 109 because it's not legal. It's they're not good people, not good players. And so that year, I'm busting my tail. So that following spring of 99, I'm busting my tail. My goal, Neil, is as this walk-on linebacker – my goal is that fifth year senior, I get to start on special teams. Like, that's literally like
that's what you're thinking.
That is my goal. Cause if I start on special teams, I letter. And I just wanted that letter jacket. Right. I mean, seeing those seniors and those upperclassmen.
So you're not thinking Super Bowl. You're not thinking NFL. You're not thinking All Pro. No. Get the letter on your jacket.
Exactly. Just like, I mean, like, reality, like, because when your mom passes away and all this stuff, you get a little humble pie early. Yeah. And so, like, I was kind of realistic with myself. I'm like, because right now I'm on an island. Like, you know, I'm going to Iowa where everyone back home is like, what's that boy thinking? Like, there's no way he's not good enough. Like, that's the University of Iowa. That's Division I. Like, there's no way. You know, so I have pretty much everything against me, and so it was just like, gosh, if I get that Letterman jacket, I can walk around. And I thought that was the rest of my life, walk around with a Letterman jacket, you know.
So how did it change then? What changed for you to become the player that you became in the NFL? And was it as simple as, do you feel you were just more suited to be a tight end than a linebacker? Because you started as a linebacker, then you got moved over to tight end.
So
did the light go on somewhere else?
No, it was that switch. So you know, all winter, all camp, I'm just killing all these drills, like just fast. Mm. And you know, Coach Ferentz is looking at me like, and then they watch, you know, practice tape and watch game. You know, well, I didn't play any games, but just watching practice film, like, why is this guy just crushed the speed, you know, all the drills, all, you know, in first place and all these drills, but he gets on field and he just looks lost. And it's true because I was a great backyard linebacker. Like wherever the ball is, that's me. Like, you want me on your team. But, like, this whole thing, like, when you get to Division I and actually just organize football.
There's a scheme.
Yeah, there's a scheme. You know, there's rules. You know, you have responsibilities. Yeah. It's not just, like go, you know, tackle the quarterback.
See football,
you know,
go get it. Yeah,
exactly. So Coach is like, Dallas, you – you're not very good, but you seem to be like pretty athletic. He's like, I think you might be suited if, you know, have you ever played tight end? I'm like, no. And so he tried so bad. And so my brother Derek at Iowa State was honorable mention all Big 12. And that was my goal, is to be honorable mention all Big 12, yeah. You know, like if I got to start, if I got to play. So I had a little resistance. I was like, no, I'm a linebacker. And then finally, about after a year, about 6 months, he finally convinced me. I mean, could you imagine? We would never have met if I would have stayed linebacker, because I would have been a third string linebacker the rest of my life.
Yeah, no, it's just funny how life takes you down certain paths.
And Neil, sure. I put my hand down, and it was like I was like at home. Like it was just like, oh my gosh, like running routes, catching the ball, transit. You know, it just like this is awesome.
So Dallas just mentioned putting his hand in the ground there, but when he got to the NFL, he was at the forefront of a change that saw the move tight end playing in the slot like a big wide receiver.
And since it was early in that type of movement, if you will, you know, that certainly isn't where I started. And so when I was coming out, you know, my biggest knock was always too small, you know, because tight ends needed to be 6'5", 200, and, you know, they needed
Mark
to be
Bavaro.
They needed to be a glorified tackle. They needed to be just kind of a little more athletic, you know? Yeah. And so that was my thing. I was like, crap, I got to – so, Neil, I weighed 257 pounds during pro day.
Wow.
And I still do not understand. And this is where, like, I'm just –
you might be a big tight end in today's NFL.
That's how much it's changed. I would be a true Y. it was one of those things that, like, I got to eat, got to eat. And so that whole semester getting ready for the combine, I mean, it was all ball. I mean, worked out and ate I don't even know how many calories. But just, you know, so – but that was my knock. It's like, oh, he's too small.
Yeah.
So then I get in the league, and my rookie year, I'm probably about 252. And then the next year, I'm about 245. And then the rest of my career, I'm about 240. I try to get about 244, because then I'm naturally this – I'm naturally probably about 230. So I'd eat so much, and it was so hard to keep weight on. So as the season progressed, I would just naturally get down to about 238. And, just eating everything, but I'm just burning it. So. Sure. So it was just one of those things that as my role in, you know, kind of becoming more of a slot, you know, split out wide, you know, more motion and doing all that stuff, then, you know, I kind of geared my body towards that, because it's like, wait a minute, you learn how to block, and you know, you kind of, you know, get the little ins and outs of kind of, you know, holding, you know, and, you know, that's where Sean Gale would love to, you know, that's all we do is hold. It was just that, you know, working on the craft and really kind of letting it develop with the masterminds of Tom Moore, our offense coordinator, and obviously Peyton Manning.
Mm. What was it like playing with Peyton? How much did he make you even more of a player? And I know we've talked off camera before how demanding he was. You know, if you're running a route that's 18 back to 16 and you go 17 back to 15, you're in trouble, right?
That's
kind of how he was, wasn't it?
It really was. And you know,
did that get on you though, or was that good?
Oh, it was awesome. I needed that. Okay. You know, I
didn't annoy you.
No, because at the end of the day, there's nothing better than knowing what you need to do, right? Then you go along to other teams and you're just like, what's my role here? Like, what am I doing? Right. What's my job? And that's, you know, that's like, that's what we spent most of our time doing, is to like make sure everyone knew. You know, that's the hardest thing to explain, especially to my dad, who's in the crowd and thinking I'm always open. And I'm like, hey.
That's what we always think.
Exactly.
That.
And I'm like, hey, we know, like, when the play's called and we see the defense, like, I can tell you who's getting the ball, you know, if they run their route, if they get open, you know, and then I know who's going to get the ball second, you know. And sometimes Peyton would go, you know, he'd be Peyton and he'd go away against the grain.
But you might start a route where, you know, as you're coming off the line, this is not for me, I'm helping somebody.
Exactly.
You know that.
You know, and there's so many routes like that. And so, you know, that's kind of when you say, oh, my number's never been called. You know, like guys know, like, the play, that's my play.
Right.
You know, and so I would like to think that that I helped Peyton. You know, I think I'm a good enough player to say that I did.
Yeah.
But I also am smart enough and not naive to think that that dude's pretty special, and he kind of proved that he kind of made anything work.
He was, but point to most good quarterbacks around the NFL throughout history, I'd say they had a reliable tight end as well. It's quite a safety blanket position, isn't it?
I tell you what, I mean, I think it's twofold. I think the good quarterbacks know how to use the tight end.
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, man, if you're a quarterback, you know, it's almost like that. It is that security blanket. It's just like you should be, you know, if you're having a rough day of throwing that out route, that 16-yard comeback or whatever, if you're just not having confidence in your seat, you know, it's like, but if you have a guy in the middle just beating up on these punk linebackers, like, that's a good feeling, you know? And so that's kind of where I feel like, you know, I was here,
yeah,
you know, whenever you need me. And that, you know, that's kind of the, you know, that's something where I could flip it and say, man, I should get the ball more, but because I'm always open, not always open, but I'm, you know, they can't stop me. But then you look, we got Marvin Harrison. Yeah. We got Reggie Wayne.
Like, did anyone ever say that? Did anyone ever go back to, or did they have such respect for Peyton and such respect for the entire offense? Like you just said, you knew you had so many bad men on that offense.
Yeah.
So, but did you still kind of, did people still do that? Or was there that kind of, well, we know that I'm going to get my pieces, but I'm not going to get all of the pie.
Yeah, I know when I came, you know, Marvin Harrison is, you know, he's kind of publicly known to just want the ball, you know. He's a wide receiver, right? and not only is he a wide receiver, but he's a Hall of Fame wide receiver.
Yes.
And it's so funny, you know, go back to your first question about watching football. I didn't watch football. You know, I didn't watch football really growing up.
Right.
I love the Cowboys.
See more, just playing in the back.
I love Herschel Walker. Like, he was my favorite, and then Emmitt Smith, and mm-hmm. then, you know. But this is how naive I was. You'll enjoy this story. So I get drafted by the Colts. All right. So I'm at a hotel in Iowa City, and Bill Polian, the GM, calls up and say, "Dallas, we're going to take you with the 24th pick." And I'm like, "Oh man!" So I'm sitting there and in the hotel room, and my whole family around me, and. And he's like, "Well, Dallas, we're going to, you know, Mr. Irsay is going to send his plane. We're going to fly you out here. We're going to do a press conference. You know, we're going to have a jersey to hang up, you know, hold up. Like, what number do you want to be?" And I'm like, "Oh, shoot." And I was 44 in college. And I'm like, "Probably can't be 44, can I? You know, I mean, a tight end number has to be 80. And he goes, "Yeah." He's like, "You probably need an 80s number." I'm like, "You know what? You know, let's double it. I'll be 88.
Yep.
And there's a pause on the phone. He's like, "Dallas, that Marvin Harrison wears 88. And instantly I'm like, "I know that name. I should probably have known that."
So
and
how did
so,
you end up with 44 then? Did they let
so was it within, do you remember when I told you I was 109? Actually, yeah. I think I was 116 my real number. So as my sophomore year comes around, we had the senior Raj Clark on the team. He was a linebacker.
Right.
And at that time, my brother Dan was 11 at college. He's a quarterback. Derek was 11 as a linebacker at Iowa State. I wanted number 11.
Right.
So I go to the Iowa football. I said, "Hey, any chance I can get number 11? He's a senior. He's graduating. Could I get number 11? Yeah. We'll probably that should work." So they give it to this schlub, four-star recruit out of Pennsylvania, Ed Hinkle. So he takes his number. "Dallas, we got a new number for you, though." I'm like, "Really? What number 11? He's like, "No, we gave that to Ed Hinkle. He's an incoming freshman. But Raj Clark graduated, and he's number 44. So we're going to give you 44. That way we don't have to change the name."
On the back of the
–
How did they get around the rules in the NFL, or was it okay to have it?
So forever – So how they got around it, so like my first couple of years, if you look in the program, I'm listed as tight end / fullback.
Oh, nice.
In the program. And so I don't know, like pregame, right. If the team had to
– make you eligible.
designate me as like a full-time, you know.
Wow.
And so, you know, we had a preseason game. It was our second preseason game out in Denver. And John Madden was doing the game. And I guess – from all the peeps told me at home, but I guess he was just killing me on my number. He's like, why does this – he's a first-round draft. Why does he have number 44? That is just – it just does not make sense to me, you know, because he's old school coming from the 80s, you know. So, I mean, it was just it was just one of those things that – it just stuck, and because I couldn't come up with another 80s number, right. I'm like, and they're like, you know what? We'll just give you 44, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
and that was literally how 44 came about.
We'll be back with Dallas Clark after this short break on the Neil Reynolds Podcast. Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and my conversation with Dallas Clark. So before the break, we heard how Dallas had battled his way through college to reach the NFL, switching positions to get an opportunity at Iowa. In the NFL, however, Dallas faced many more battles, in particular with the likes of the New England Patriots and other teams from the AFC who helped to define an era.
I think AFC football was just so dynamic back then. Yeah. I mean, you had the Steelers, Patriots, us. Even San Diego had some, Kansas City had some flashes of some really good, you know, Priest Holmes and Trent Green and, you know, those guys. And so, you know, we just had, you know, you just had some big, big monsters that you had to get through if you wanted to obviously achieve that final goal of raising the Lombardi Trophy. And obviously, you know, not while we're creating our dynasty in Indianapolis with 10 plus wins for like 8 years in a row or nine or something ridiculous, you know, there's some other people doing some good things too.
At the same time,
so it was one of those things that, you know, good, bad, indifferent, but you always had to face those Patriots.
In a different era, you might have won 4 or 5 Super Bowls.
Absolutely.
In other eras, when you look at what other teams did at various times.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, it's you know personally, I look at it the same way. Like, man, I love the era that I played in, but it was hard to make the Pro Bowl when you had Tony Gonzalez and then obviously Antonio Gates, who was just just playing street ball down in San Diego. You know, so it's just, you know, so good or bad. But I also do, you know, I also like looking at Peyton's legacy and his mark on the game. I also believe, like, just looking at that guy. You know, I think what makes him great is that he had a Brady. You know, he had a nemesis. I think it just makes it a better story to have that villain, you know? So if there was no villain and we were just kind of rolling, you know, it's kind of like who's Tom Brady's villain now?
Yeah, we keep hoping that one's going to pop up.
Yeah.
And there hasn't been.
There hasn't been.
No.
You know, and that's why, again, I feel like
we played in a special time,
you know, and nothing against these quarterbacks, these young quarterbacks now, and, you know, Lamar Jackson and Mahomes and all that stuff. But it was just a special time for football.
What was it like to win the Super Bowl, lift that trophy? We talked about this before as well, I know, but in an absolute downpour. In Miami, you think you'd be if you're going to get a Super Bowl where you have a lovely week and a beautiful game day.
Yeah, you're thinking, like, do I need sunscreen? Yeah, like,
is this a night game? Okay, but it's going to be warm.
Yeah, no. You know, I mean, and it just – okay, it's going to rain. You know, I've been in Florida a couple of times, and usually it downpours hard for – 15 minutes and then it's gone.
Yeah.
This thing, I swear, was just a cloud right over Dolphin Stadium.
Did they keep the balls dry or not when you're catching?
No.
They're soaked.
They're trying, but it was no – with that type of rain. You know, it was amazing, though. I mean, the field, the footing, you know, it was really good. Mm. You know, it should have just been a disaster. But selfishly – it kind of took away from the game, you know.
Distracted a bit. Almost.
You know, because it just didn't let us show America and show the world. Right. Like throwing Marv, throwing Reg, getting me across the field. You know, just it really became a ground game.
But the stand's empty at times as well. I mean, it's a Super Bowl.
It was still full. It was still full. Yeah.
I have really in-depth questions about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, not X's nose and get.
No.
Did you get changed at halftime?
We did.
Did you?
Yeah.
You're just soaked.
New
uniform and everything.
So you took everything off and started over again.
It's amazing.
Because it helped for 4 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You go back. You know,
by the time you warmed up and got ready for second half, it was pretty much. Did I change? I mean, I have no grass stains on me, but still wet.
I know you. There's pictures of you out there with the Super Bowl trophy. You got to look after it for quite some time.
Yeah.
After the game.
Very bizarre.
Yeah.
Very bizarre because it's.
Must have been a bit of a pinch yourself moment as well. That
Neil,
the way
still
you talked about
it still is. Even now, because you've watched Super Bowls. You know, even though I didn't really watch football, but you'd always watch Super Bowl. Mm. And then obviously, when I started kind of watching the Cowboys, you know, then obviously they won 4 in a row. So got to watch a lot of Super Bowls, and you watch, you know, those guys and the trophy and how they carry it and how they treasure it and. And, you know, then all, you know, they go to the commercial and you just, you know, and to us, to the average Joe, like that's where our it ends. Yeah. You know, that's
just
where
it
just,
TV.
Yeah, you just, yeah. Whatever you see. And so to be able to kind of be living that and to be able to, you know, like they're going in and out of commercial and all that. And I get the Lombardi trophy and everyone just kind of goes, finds their family. I go find my family. I still have the trophy. Because a Peyton or someone gave it to me off the stage, and I'm like trying to take as many pictures as we can because I know someone's gonna grab it.
Yeah,
I mean, because it's just like, hey, it's
mine. You're gonna have it for like 30 seconds.
30 seconds, max. You know, and so
how long did you have it,
Neil? Probably 30, 45 minutes. It was the most bizarre thing. So I'm on the side, you know, and so like the crowd has kind of dwindled. Everyone's, you know, gotten out of there, obviously all the Bears fans, and it's just kind of Colts people and family, and so I'm like, you know, I'm telling my family I'm going to go change, and I still have the flipping trophy. It's like, what is going on here? And so we go in, and I'm, you know, I give Frog, our equipment manager, I'm like, you know, here's my helmet, and hey, I'm tired of holding this. Does anyone else want this thing? You know, everyone. And now I'm kind of thinking to myself, am I celebrating wrong? Should I be doing something? Like, where's everyone else?
To give it to somebody.
You know? So it's just really bizarre. Yeah. I mean, but it was. And I don't know if it was the team's way of like saying thank you or what. But right. I hate to brag about myself, but you know, I had a special run during the playoffs.
Yes, and you came back from injury, right?
Yeah, so I had a knee injury and came back, and it was almost like just like light bulb or lightning. But Peyton and I mean, it was just Tom Warren, the coordinator, like just the plays call. I mean, it's just really
you're in that groove.
We were in a zone. Yeah. I mean, it was and just, you know, had some. Exciting games, and just, you know, we all just stepped up our game, and so it was just made it all really extra special.
In Dallas's All-Pro year of 2009, the Colts came up short in Super Bowl 44. Playing in Miami again, the Colts would lose to the New Orleans Saints, having defeated the Chicago Bears there in 2007. Even with one Super Bowl ring on his finger, the pain of defeat wasn't any easier to digest. In fact, it was like a punch to the stomach and anywhere else Dallas could imagine.
A full haymaker into the gut. I mean,
in
the face, in
the parts we can't discuss.
In the parts that hurt the worst, you know, in the back.
Still hurts.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because it's, you know, I'm not going to say we were the better team, but we were the better team.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah, that you know, because you look at Peyton and you just look at the teams and you look how we are built, and not making excuses, but again, that team, those teams that we had, should have more than one Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and granted, you know, it's our fault. You know, at some point down the line, it's you know, we didn't make the plays.
Right.
You know, nothing's given to you. It doesn't matter if you're the prettiest at the prom. Like, you still have to be nice to people and still have to get the votes. You know, for football, we still had to go out and make the plays, and we didn't. And the other teams did. But, man, we were a well-built machine for a long time. And that's just, you know, all the credit. That's why Bill Polian's wearing a gold jacket in the Hall of Fame, because he just was the mastermind behind that. And so that was just kind of the – so then we're at that – you know, we're at the second party with the Saints, you know, thinking this is our number, you know. Yeah,
it's the second one.
And
add to the legacy.
We're just – you know, first quarter, I mean, we are just grooving. And it's just like, you know – and then – you know, you hate to say it, you know, but then they did that onside kick coming out.
Changed it,
and it just – it really did kind of change it. But, you know, again, we could have just taken the ball down and put a – you know, taken a drive and put it in the end zone that we didn't, you know, for this reason and that. And so, again, it's on us. But, man, yeah, two would have been really – you have two hands.
Yeah,
so you
just, one each hand. Yeah. Absolutely. last couple. Locker room. I sense knowing you, how I've got to know you over the last few years, you loved being in the locker room. You loved being around the guys. Is that the case? Do you miss it? And how often do you guys still talk?
Neil, that is like, you know, I think Peyton, maybe Saturday, Jeff Saturday or center, you know, those guys have pretty good minds of like games and situations. Like I can think of some plays, you know, I can look at, you know, maybe a couple football cards and like, oh yeah, I remember that play or whatever. But and this is why you play the game.
Yeah.
It's the locker room. It's the practice. It's the gruel grind that you have to put in to just have a chance. Not even be successful, just to have a chance to be able to just give yourself a chance to be successful. It is so hard. And when you're doing that with a group of men that you are around throughout the year more than probably your family. And it's just such a – the fact that it's a barbaric just like
– you got to go through it together.
To go through that together, I mean, you form a bond and a love for your teammates and your men that is irreplaceable. You can't buy it at Target or Walmart or – Tesco or whatever the store is here. You know,
safe.
Marks and Spencer. you know, so you can't go there and buy it for 20 pounds. Like it's not available in stores and it's not available anywhere. And that's the part that you miss. And so that's why you can, you know, see a former teammate, a former opponent that you played against and haven't seen them for years, but it's like
instant.
Like you could sit down and have a cup of coffee and talk for an hour and a half. And it's not like glory days. It's just it's an appreciation of, gosh, can you remember? You remember when we, you know, and
it's a shared membership to an exclusive club. Isn't
it is. It really is. And it's one of those things like if you're not in it, you could just roll your eyes and go, you know, but you know, I say it in the most humble, sincere way that it's something that I don't know what other business or job you could
have given you that.
You can't. No. It's just – and that's why you just love sports. Mm-hmm. And that's why you love the camaraderie. And that is what you miss. I mean, I can hardly tell you what our records were on most, you know, or plays or that. But, you know, like – get together with Brandon Stokely and Peyton and Saturday on a golf course right now. I mean, it's priceless. I mean, just to be able to like just flip each other crap and just be able, you know, just kind of, you know what buttons to push on them. And,
right. You're right back there.
It is. And then, you know, now we're all having families and kids and getting our kids together and just having that second generation of kind of like, you know, being that former football player, but having our kids look at us as just as dad.
Just dad. Dad, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right?
You can't do that.
I mean, it's, you know, my biggest pet peeve is like we just had this happen at the Iowa football game. A guy comes up, we're sitting in the stands, and guy looks up and he's like, they don't even know, do they? And my wife and I were looking at him like, what? He's like, the kids don't even know. What? They don't even know who their dad is. and I almost wanted to throw him out of the stands.
Right.
I'm like, listen to what you're saying, first of all. Like, do you think that's important? Like,
yeah, that's
these
not for
are
them.
My children.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm not after them chasing me around for an autograph.
Yeah. It's like, you should listen to me because I scored a touchdown. You know,
yeah, no.
So it just.
Listen to me because I'm your dad, not because of that.
You know, it's just one of those things where you just like, you look.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it gets a little out there. But I tell you what, that is. you know, having those teammates and those lifelong friends that you would literally, I mean, suit up any and I'm not talking about football. I'm just no, like talking
you'll
about
be there for them if they need
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Dallas signed a 1-day contract to finish his career with the Indianapolis Colts after playing out a season each in Tampa and Baltimore. Retired from football since 2014, he now lives on a remote farm in Iowa, a life that couldn't be further away from the one he lived in the NFL.
It is 50% on purpose and 50% just by chance, because the 50%, we went back home. My wife and I are high school sweethearts, and so her folks still live in Livermore, where we grew up, and so that was kind of the plan, is to like whenever this fantasy world ends for us. I mean, it really was an adventure. It's kind of what we called it. We're going back home, and just to be around family, just for the kids, but also what was internally for me was I wanted my kids to grow up in kind of an area in an environment that I grew up in where it's first year living, and it's but to have a conscious enough mindset to introduce them to the world and to take them, you know, we brought them over to London last week and to be able to just like, you know, open their eyes and
see that.
Yeah. You know, and then let them choose like, hey, you don't have to stay on the farm. Like there's a world out there. God made us put us on this earth for a purpose, for a reason. You'll find yours, and you know, we'll introduce them to different things where their heart gravitates to.
Yep.
And for us, it was to get back home, and I didn't want to be in Indianapolis where those kids grew up, and just like that guy in the stands that said, do you even know, you know,
right?
Yeah, I didn't want
to breathe in space.
And I didn't want them to grow up like privileged or, you know, mm-hmm. just like thinking that they could get away with things and stuff like that, or just didn't have to try hard, or, you know, and obviously we wouldn't allow that, but I thought it was just like, man, getting out of Indy, as much as we loved Indianapolis, mm-hmm. great friends, great people, great town, but went to the farm, man, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
it is. It is really. It's good to be able to go out there, do chores, throw hay bales around, and see the kids see me doing that. Because it's like, hey, this fence is broke. The animals are getting out. We got to fix it.
That's what made you country strong. That's the only reason you can beat me in an arm wrestle.
Only reason.
That's it.
That's
it. You hadn't gone to the farm.
You would have a chance. Should we do that right now?
Let's have one.
Yeah.
Got it.
You want to put the mic down. You can do two arms.
Can I have two?
Yeah, you can have two. All right. Get another one up there.
You go commentate because they can't hear me.
Yeah. All right. So.
You say go.
One, two, three, go. Okay. So, no, go. Go. Okay. So. You're all.
I've been
that's
emasculated.
The farm. That's the farm.
It's country strong.
Look at the dedication you have.
Feel that. Feel that.
What? You broke a sweat.
Yeah. Pathetic. But that was fascinating. Dallas, always so good to.
Well, Neil, here, I'll close with this.
Go on, you finish up. Last word to you.
You're phenomenal. And I tell you what, this when I got introduced to this job to come over here and to see London as an ambassador for the Colts when they came over here 3 years ago, I have no idea. You know, it was kind of like great way to see London, you know, just first class with the Colts and the NFL and get introduced to you guys just by chance by doing a little thing during the game. And then you guys invite me over, and we do our first Sunday in the studio. And not only is it the city and the NFL and kind of the on-ground, just, you know, the building framework, but really, like I mentioned you to Karen and my wife and to people at home. I'm like, you know what? I have this gig with Sky Sports. It's kind of like, you know, England's version of ESPN.
Yep.
And there's this guy, Neil Reynolds, that I work with. And you're in it for the right reason. Like, you truly love the game, and you're very knowledgeable and make my job way easier. But it really is it's a treat to come over and work with you, because it could easily – be like, hey, the plus side, I get to go to London. Bad side, I got to put up with 8 hours with XYZ, you know, or whoever.
Right.
But It just really is like it's really fun to experience NFL over here in the UK with you and to have your insight because you're obviously, you know, 24/7 over here, live over here and have and I love like getting the pulse on like, hey, what's going on here? Yeah. And your insight is just so valuable and you're doing wonders for the game. And so I can't thank you enough for letting me kind of hang on your coat tails a little bit.
Well, I appreciate it,
man. Absolutely, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So there you are. That's my conversation with my good friend Dallas Clark from before the whole coronavirus pandemic. So when you hear Dallas mentioning he was in London last week, that was not last week. That was some time ago. But let's go to the mailbag then. Let's bring in producer Gary Hayes. Gary, do you enjoy that?
Hi, Neil. Sorry, I'm swiping a tear away from my eye after those kind words that Dallas said about you there.
It's good,
great.
Isn't it?
You're great, Neil.
Well, I'm. Who am I to argue with Dallas Clark? I mean, I should stay humble, but, you know, if Dallas thinks it, far from me being the one to tell him he's wrong.
I've seen the size of him as well, so I wouldn't argue with him either.
he's a good lad, and he is a bundle of energy. He actually still lives his entire life. When he comes over around Sky Sports and he's with us in the studio, it's like being in the locker room with him. He never stops. I mean, I've been on stage with him at NFL UK Live stage shows, and I've got my cue cards, and they've been out in the either been in my dressing room backstage or just left on the side. And I've walked out onto stage and looked down to read something off my cue card, and everything's been scribbled out. And then I turn to the next cue card, and in big marker pen it says Dallas Clark is great. I mean, the man never stops playing practical jokes, but he is a lot of fun.
Might start doing that to our production notes. Gary Hayes is great.
There you go. Just scribble over everything and make me ad lib it all. Yeah. What we got from the good folks this week?
Right. So we've only got two questions again this week, but they're good nonetheless. The first is from Ken Volkenberg, who says, who is the person or persons who is totally different when you met and spoke to them compared to what you thought about them based on their reputation or stories?
Oh, good one. I mean, I've interviewed so many people, and you know, some of them surprise you. Some of them are exactly as advertised. I would say Ndamukong Suh was, I was really wary the first time I interviewed him. He was still playing with the Detroit Lions at the time. He'd been voted the dirtiest and meanest player in the NFL. He was at the center of a lot of sort of dodgy tackles and actions on the field. Nicest guy in the world. And I've interviewed him about five or six times since then. He always comes over, always says hello, gives you a hug. He is complete opposite of what I expected. And it's when he crosses that white line, he becomes something else. I think Sean Payton has a reputation for being really scratchy with the media. I've mentioned this before. I think he was utterly charming when I met him and we sat and talked. And then when the cameras stopped rolling, he was happy to still talk. His daughter works in the media, so he was talking about TV and all of that stuff. So he was really good. And actually, I would say my good friend from Sky Sports, Rob Ryan. So I didn't know Rob until he started coming on Sky a couple of years back. And the impression around the NFL is Rob Ryan is this wild man, wild child. Yeah. And this is the wild hair and kind of, you know, there's clips of him going berserk on the sidelines. Rob is the nicest family man you will ever meet and one of the most caring people you will ever meet. And it's very, very different from what people publicly perceive of him. Massively different. And so that's just three that come to mind.
That's funny because I've never met him, but when we were doing the game programs together, I spoke to him a lot on the phone. He was just a pure gent every time.
He is. And he loves it. And he loves teaching the game to people. He's very, very down to earth. He's not a prima donna at all. He's actually one of my favorites. If you were going to say, who do you want to work with on Sky Sports, then Rob's right at the top. He's brilliant.
Okay, last question this week is from Phil Houghton, who asks, which 3 to 4 head coaches do you think are best at developing young players, both on pitch and ensuring they do all the right things off it?
Oh, tough one. I'll tell you coaches who I think have really good relationships with their players.
I think John Harbaugh is one in Baltimore. I think the way he has kind of handled Lamar Jackson's entry into the NFL has been very impressive. Andy Reid is an obvious one who springs to mind, not just for the way he kind of keeps his players engaged and he keeps them on track and he gives those that have had troubled past, he gives them second chances. He teaches them life lessons, but he's also that way with his coaches. I mean, he has a very, very impressive coaching tree. And actually, one man who comes off that coaching tree is Doug Peterson, the Philadelphia Eagles head coach. I think he's very good with his young players, helps them through adverse times. The Eagles have had a lot of adversity in recent years. They still remain competitive. And then some of the younger ones, Dan Quinn, I know he gets a lot of stick for Atlanta not doing well in the last couple of years, but he's got a great culture. I know that from people who work inside that building in Atlanta. And then two young ones who I think players really kind of resonate with, and that's Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, Sean McVay with the Rams. I think players would run through brick walls for those two.
We all love Sean McVay.
We do. Who wouldn't love a little bit of Sean McVay?
So speaking of loving a little bit of big stars, we can't say who, but we've got a big star on next, right?
We have. So from September the 3rd, which is when our next episode comes out, we will be going weekly on the Neil Reynolds podcast, and we have a superstar lined up. And I'm just going to say, follow me on socials, and we all will be revealed, but we're going to leave that. It's a little tease for now. So we thank you for joining us this week. Hope you enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun catching up with Dallas Clark, and our big name guest awaits. We'll speak to you next time. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.